I am just super pumped about this Sunday and our gathering, and I know it was crazy getting out of the house, but you needed to get out. You know, so many of you just needed to be here today, you know, but anyways, it's good to be here, and this is our kickoff to our Live Free campaign. This campaign is our new campaign. You know, there was the core campaign. Some of you remember that. This is our replacement of that. This is our Live Free campaign. So during this next year, we're going to bring in the money, and we're going to release it toward ministries in the community. And you can see those ministries that we've identified over the next four quarters, as well as bring money in and help pay down the debt that we currently owe on the building. So this is our building fund campaign, but it's bigger than that. It's Live Free. It's helping people experience freedom both in this community and around the world. And you have an envelope in your bulletin, and we're going to ask you to fill that out and put it in the offering plate later. If you've got $10,001 bills, we'll get you a trash bag and you can put it in there and whatever we need to do to collect money. But we want to knock it out of the park this year and just make an incredible difference in the community and in the world. Today, we have the wonderful privilege and opportunity of having the founder of Beloved Ministry with us. Beloved is this ministry that we will support in this first quarter of this next year. Sandra Savage is with us, and we're so excited to have her share her story and some about ministry. And also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, some of you have met her, but some of you have not. Sarah Hall is the area director. She's the executive director of Beloved, and she's also our administrative coordinator here at Eastland. She's recently hired. So Sarah, if you would stand up, and let's just honor you for a minute. Thank you, Sarah. All right. And if Sandra would go ahead and make her way to the stage, we'll have our conversation.
Morning, y'all. How y'all doing this morning? Thank you for braving the snowmageddon to come out here. I was going, I did live in Iceland for a while, and it is warmer. This is right now.
Yeah, a tough day, but it is so good to be here and good to be with you. And I'm so glad you gave your time to be here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So just start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit of your story.
All right. I'm going to tell you a little bit of the story. Now, before I start, I just want to let you all know, you know, there may be some stuff you might not have heard in churches before being said. You know, if you're under the age of 13, you might want to not be in here, or if you are, hey, parents, be ready to have a great conversation with kids. So,
and that's a great point. If you need to dismiss any of your younger kids, feel free to do that. We have children's activities down at the other wing of the hall. Feel free to do that at this time if you need to. We want to be sensitive to that.
All right, then. Okay, so just a little bit of my backstory. I was raised in a small town in Kentucky, Mount Sterling. I don't know if y'all know, but you can probably hear it on me. I'm from Mount Sterling. And I was raised in just a great family. Like, they really love me, and I really love them. You know, I didn't have a super, super dysfunctional type of family, though, you know, every family has its issues, right? And my mother and father divorced when I was four, and my mom married my stepdad, who I just loved him. There was alcoholism that ran through the family. There was also pornography addiction that ran through the family. And when I was 10, I found a bunch of pornography, and that really started a trajectory of my life that was unfortunate. And even in that trajectory, I got to see the grace of Jesus, like most people don't get to. And so I found the pornography and I saw it. And I went, well, this is how I'm supposed to be. This is how I'm supposed to look. This is how I'm supposed to act. It made me think that from these pages, what the women looked like, that's how I should be. And so I started living my life like that. I developed a very early addiction to alcohol and pills. And then went off to college, just a full-blown addict. In that, met, married, and divorced my first husband. And found myself at the age of 19, really going, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Met my second husband, who is much older than me, and he introduced me to a world of cocaine. I became a cocaine addict in the middle of that and started my career as an adult entertainer. And so I worked as an adult entertainer nationally and internationally for 13 years after that. Within that time, you know, that's a whole other deep, deep story. But with my alcoholism and my drug addiction, like I hit bottom. And the July 15th, 1996, in that week, I was raped by three police officers and a taxi cab driver in the middle of Mexico City and thrown out of a cab. That was my bottom of everything, and I knew something had to change. So at that point, I got sober. So July 15th in 1996, I began this road of sobriety, and I've been sober for 18 years since then. And that's a miracle in itself. And even through that, at that point, so those addictions ended, and my addiction shifted to money. And so it was, I threw myself into work. I threw myself into a career that I'd chosen. I'd been living in Mexico City for some years and ended up, after living there for 8 years, I found myself in Miami at a convention and took a hard look at my life at that point. And I really had achieved like this pinnacle of what I thought everything was. And I started crying, just going, if this is all there is, like there's, what is the actual use of me being here? Like there's got to be something more. There has got to be something more. And at that point, I decided to move back to Kentucky. You know, that was a hard decision for me. And it was one that I didn't know at the time was guided by God, but He certainly had a hand in bringing me back to my home state, you know. And I had a friend who, you know, pestered me, just bugged me to go to a church with them. And I was like, you gotta be kidding. Do you know who I am? And ended up one day, after lots of pestering, walking through the doors of a little church and in full leather, you know, smoking. I was like, I want to see if you Christians really love people like you say you do. Because I've encountered a whole lot of hypocrisy in my life. And it turns out they did. They just loved me. They welcomed me in. The very first woman that I spoke to, you know, she had her little flower print dress. I was a little nervous. I was going, they're going to make me wear flower print. No, you know, I was like, oh gosh, no. I can't wear makeup anymore. What's going on? You know, but no, nobody did that. And 6 months later, after being there and really hearing the love of Christ and understanding that He wasn't pointing a finger at me, that He was really just outstretching His arms to me like that, you know, when I understood that and understood grace and that Jesus just wanted to have a relationship with me, I gave my life to Christ. And that was on April 27th in 2003. And since then, like, He has done the miraculous in my life. And a few years after that, I started groups for women who were struggling with pornography addiction, because that had been a part of my story. And then a year after that, Jesus just tapped me on the heart and said, you know, there's a whole lots of girls out there who don't know that they're loved and valued. So we started going into the clubs in Lexington, and now we're in 13 cities around the country and some internationally, going into clubs, letting women and guys know that no matter what their job occupation is, that they are just really loved, and we're here to support them and not try to tell somebody, hey, you've got to leave your job, but go, you know, you're valued where you are, and we love you, and if you need any help, let us know, and if you need to transition, let us know, and if, you know, whatever it is, just let us know, and we'll help do that, and we create communities for people to feel safe. And so we did that and launched off Beloved, and that was in 2007. So we've been loving on people and just loving people consistently since then. I myself, a few years ago, as the founder, had to really look at my own life and go, you know, we always tell the women and men that we encounter, you know, what was one of the dreams that you had as a kid? Like, let's look at making that possible. You know, is it being a doctor? Is it going back to school? Is it, you know, what is it? Because anybody can do anything in 7 years. If you're here right now and you're in your 50s and you want to be a doctor, you can actually start and you can actually be a doctor. Like, you can do that. Like, people have the power with Christ to accomplish anything. So I had to look at my own life and go, what were my dreams and passions? And so it was always music. So we've gone into, you know, recording and making music and having a blast. At that point, I shifted a lot of our daily activities over to our amazing executive director, Sarah Hall, who you all got a chance to meet. And I want to ask to stand up again because she deserves a double clap. And just saying, if anybody ever needs to know how to love somebody unconditionally, this girl can show you how. You know, loving people without an agenda is kind of our tag. You know, we go, we want to love people without an agenda. And that agenda can even be, I want to lead you to Christ, like, or I want you to get out of the industry, or I want to be the one to help you. Or, like, if you just actually purely love people without an agenda, they will see Jesus. You don't have to, you know, force that on somebody. But that's a little bit of my story, how it got started, where that passion started, and where we are now.
So. When you consider your own story and then even the stories of people that are in that industry, what would you say are some of the effects of that industry on people?
Well, anyone in the sex industry, you know, there's statistics that say the level of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that happens to someone who's working within the sex industry, which I, you know, I experienced for 13 years. I was there for 13 years. I get it. I know what it's like, but they say it's very comparable to being a war veteran because of the amount of sexual trauma or emotional trauma or even just physical trauma that you go through when you work in the industry. So I know that there's people need to feel like they're worth and valuable to someone so that they can begin to walk out what that actually means. I know for me, I looked at my value as attached to how much money I could bring in a day. So if I was having a great day, you know, and I made a couple $1,000s one day, then I was on top of the world. If I made a couple $100s, I was like, you know, what's wrong with me? What do I need to change? Like, my whole value system was attached to that. So it's hard, you know, and there's not a lot of support out there. There's a lot of judgment instead of a lot of support. And that's where we have really been trying to talk to people and educate people of going, you can't, you know, Jesus didn't judge, like, Jesus didn't pick at the woman at the well. He had a conversation with her and a relationship with her. And so that's what we really strive to be there for people and consistently create relationships with people.
I think you spoke in a little bit to, you know, your leaving the industry and, you know, kind of that one event that really was rock bottom for you. How hard is it for people to leave the industry?
I think it's really challenging. I mean, for me personally, because I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I got to speak with, you know, my strength, experience, and hope, and this is what I saw in my life, was it was hard. And once I was ready, I was ready. You know, I picked up 3 jobs. It was, you know, I was working a lot because I wanted to make a change in my life. And I know people who don't. You know, they get to a point where they're like, I'm too old to do this anymore. Or, you know, we have a lot of amazing women who are supporting families, and they stay in the industry for a long time, and that is their job. You know, it's we set up as an organization not to even try to pull people out. Like, that's not the deal. We just want to be a support system and go. And a lot of people do leave, you know, when it's time, or you get done with the lifestyle or the environment or staying up late at nights or just whatever that looks like. And we set up systems to help people when they're ready to do that. Like, a really good friend of mine who is just an amazing lady. She had 3 kids and working in the industry, and she came to a point where she was like, I'm really ready to get out. And we said, okay, great, we'll set you up with a financial planner. And she went through and she made a budget and she made an exit strategy, and she had 5 months that she had put on her exit strategy. And she said, okay, in these 5 months, I'll be able to really sustain my family well and supplement over here. And she did, you know. So it's hard, and it's not impossible, you know. I was there for 13 years. It's not impossible, and it is challenging. I think that that community plays a big part of that, you know, getting into a great community.
Sure. And let's talk about that a little bit, because that is difficult, church, and some of you have experienced that in the ways that you've been involved in outreach, where you try to help lead someone toward that transformation, and a lot of times leaving that old lifestyle, whatever it may be, is extremely difficult in developing a new lifestyle and a different set of priorities. What does that support system look like? What should it look like? What you mentioned earlier about families and how things feel like family.
Well, it's interesting. Like, for me, my managers and the girls that I worked with in whatever state or country that I was in, they became like family to me. You know, that's hard to walk away and go and say goodbye to someone who has become your family, you know. But when I did actually leave, one thing that was super helpful when I finally walked into a community that was loving and supportive of me is they didn't try to force God's work in my life. No one, you know, said, hey, you need to change how you dress. Hey, you need to change how you, you know, because I was worried about that. I told you I was worried about it. That they didn't do that. They trusted Jesus enough to do that work in me. And one day, little things started changing. Like, when I gave my life to Christ, little things started changing. And it's amazing what God can do when you let Him, instead of trying to force Him into doing things. When you let the Holy Spirit talk to somebody and explain something in their heart, that it just becomes ingrained in their DNA, instead of just trying to, hey, well, you need to do this, or you need to change that, or you need to, you know, I had a community that I walked into that was very supporting of me, and they just let me run it. You know, I was working at Victoria's Secret. I was working at a flower shop. I was, you know, and I was wearing crazy stuff and leading worship. I mean, nobody, you know, led worship for a long time. And then one day, Jesus just said, hey, you raised the neckline. And I went, oh, okay. Sounds good. But then that became ingrained in me. It wasn't somebody judging me, telling me, you need to change these things, you know. But I had a supportive, loving community around me.
And I'm guessing that's what it takes for all these girls and ladies and whatnot to get out. It takes that support, doesn't it?
Well, you know what? I think that with anybody, like, we all have our stuff. It's no matter who you are, you've got some stuff that you need, that you may have some issues. None of us are perfect. Jesus is perfect, right? And so all of us need a supportive community. It's not just, you know, the girls in the club or the guys in the clubs. It's we all do. Like, we all need the community and the body of Christ to be doing the job that we're supposed to be doing, and that is loving each other and loving the people around us and loving our communities, you know, just doing the things that we were asked to do, and that's it.
Mm. And the love, I guess, is hard work. I mean, it's not a one-time thing, is it?
Loving consistently, you know, that is, I think, within any community, you've got to be consistent with communicating with people. You've got, you know, y'all are starting your life groups and stuff like that. It's just the same thing. In your life groups, you got to be consistent with each other and talk to each other, and here's what I'm going through, and here's what's going on. And it's the exact same thing for everybody. Y'all, if we were doing our job as the capital C church of the world, like, we would just be loving people around us and going out and loving people and being consistent with it, You know, we can do that. We can do that. I know there are lots of people do that already. I know that. We can always step it up.
Of course, you're learning about our campaign here, our Live Free, and our making ourselves aware, and then even coming against human trafficking. When we talk about the sex industry, why should we get involved?
Well, I think that to understand how everything works together, like why the sex industry? How does that affect me? You know, I think if you look at the industry as a whole, whether it's pornography, prostitution, whether you're in it because you chose to be in it, whether someone is forcing you into it, which is trafficking, like a lot of people are on, you know, they're making great strides in human trafficking, which is a whole different thing. But it is under the umbrella of the sex industry. You know, we have to be paying attention in our own lives, in the lives of our kids, in the lives of our parents, in the lives of our friends. Like, how is the industry affecting? I kind of relate it to alcoholism, where if you go, okay, I can have a beer, I can have a glass of wine, I can have a couple glasses of wine, I can have some hard liquor, I'm drinking some more hard liquor than I'm drinking a bottle. Like, the spiral of alcoholism works like that, and then you find yourself at the bottom. The spiral of sex addiction can start with, and again, guys, this is not me just pointing at you. You know, 1/3 of all internet pornography users are women. So I'm speaking to men and women. This is not just a guy thing. I'm not trying to bash guys or anything about a porn addiction. That's everybody. We're all included in that. But the sex addiction, that spiral can go from fantasy. I got to see images in a magazine. I'm looking at porn online. I'm looking. I need to see it live. I'll go to a club. I need to act out with somebody. I'll find someone in prostitution. The acting out bottom of a sex addiction, once you've hit that point, usually either goes younger or more violent. So in our society, because of the prevalence of and the access of internet pornography, you know, 20 years ago, it was hard to access. Now it's very easy for people to access, and it's causing addiction to spiral faster. And so now you have the spiral going out of control, whether it goes either more violent or younger. And we're creating this demand. And with that, there's, you know, people are taking advantage of that and creating a supply. So it is a supply and demand. The more that we as consumers consume the sex industry, we're all contributing towards that. We're contributing to, you know, I don't know, lots of people know stats and things like that. Just one of the stats that freaked me out when I heard it as far as trafficking goes is the average age that someone is trafficked in the United States is between 12 and 14 years old. That's a 13-year-old is the average age of someone that's actually trafficked in the United States. And the life expectancy of someone who is being trafficked until the point that they die is 7 years, whether that's by a pimp or addiction or whatever. So if you're 13 and that's when you're first turned out, when you're first trafficked, that's an age expectancy of 20 years old. Like, we've got to actually be on top of the trafficking side too. So there are lots of great organizations that are doing amazing things. I think a lot of it goes back to our own personal integrity. And gosh, you all have got to understand the things that you consume do affect. They do affect people. It does affect your family. It does affect your community. If you have an issue with that, like within any of that spectrum, you got to talk to somebody. Like you really need to talk to someone and not be afraid. We as the church have to not be afraid of talking about these topics. We've got to hit it now. Had I had people when I was younger explain to me my value and my worth, if I had had lots of father figures in the community, if I had had lots of mother figures in the community who explained to me what my value and my worth is, then I would have made some different decisions in my life for sure. But like to know that every single person that's in here and the sound of my voice, that you are all so valuable. Like this is not just a sex industry thing. Like for everyone to understand their value and their worth in Jesus. That's really where we've got to hit at the root of all of it.
Mm. And so when we talk about Eastland getting involved, what does that look like for us? I mean, what would you say to us that want to be engaged in this industry and even beyond that with the whole human trafficking aspect? What are things that we can do personally here?
Such a great question. You all, there's so many things that anybody can do. You know, we can get overwhelmed at looking at stats. We can go, oh my gosh, all this is happening. How can I make a difference? And I always say that number one has got to be prayer. Prayer's got to be the foundation of it. And that may sound, you know, that may sound easy or whatever to some people, but it is warfare. We have got to have people praying. We've got to pray for our nation. We've got to pray for our communities. We've got to be praying for each other, our own personal integrity. We've got to be praying for people who do not know their worth yet. That's one. Second, there's tons of ways you can get involved. There's lots of great organizations. I mean, with us, gosh, we're always needing people. Like, if you are a CPA, you can teach finance stuff. If you're not wanting to be on an outreach team, which is actually really hard to be a part of, like we make that pretty hard. There's lots of training and there's lots of, you know, we make it hard for people to do that. Praying, offering your services. You know, you all are doing this great campaign. Like we decided a few years ago that we don't have paid staff. We're all volunteers and we just want to take anything that ever comes in and be able to support the people that are with us, that we get to have constant communication with. If there's anything that God lays on your heart that you go, oh my gosh, I think that this could be something that I would want to do, talk to Sarah. She is like I almost cry every time I look at Sarah, which is so, so great. It's so crazy. She can direct you all in anything that you would be going, wow, I would love to be a part of it in this way. And this is not just a girl thing either. Like we need men who are really praying for each other. We need men who are saying, I'm just going to uphold integrity in my life. We need guys who drive, you know, we need security. Well, there's lots of stuff that we need. So it's really for guys and girls. Ladies, you all can do, you all can be such, such help in all of this.
Sandra, thank you for sharing with us today. We really do appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And if you would you pray for us today?
I absolutely will.
All right.
Let's stand up. Let's everybody stand up. Well, Jesus, Jesus, we just thank you. We just thank you so much. We thank you for, gosh, giving us a community that we can be in. We're in your community. And so thank you for that. Jesus, I just ask that everyone in this room, that everyone understand their worth in you. Like that everyone sitting here, like this is not just for everyone outside. Like Jesus, we've got our stuff too, and we just ask that you flow through, Holy Spirit. Will you just go around? Will you tend to hearts? Will you speak where there's confusion, Jesus? Will you absolutely show clarity for people? And Jesus, I really pray specifically for people who don't know their worth in you, whether in this room or outside, like that you start to soften hearts, that you begin to plant a sense of worth and value in them. Jesus, I just ask that everyone receive the love that you want to pour out, that people claim the identity of being loved, that we just become clay in your hand. God, just be the potter in our life. And Jesus, we just thank you. Like, we thank you that you've rescued us and that you love us. It's in your name.